the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
AV Week is produced and distributed through a partnership with Rave Publications and AV Nation. For more information, go to ravepubs.com/AV Nation. This is AV Week, episode 55, recorded Friday, August 24th, 2012. It's not a cookbook.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing. Scan.
AV Week.
Online.
This is AV Week. This is AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Also with us is Brad Grimes. He is the senior editor at Infocom. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Grimes.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Steve Greenblatt. He is the president and founder of Control Concepts. How are you, Steve?
Great, Tim. How are you?
Doing well. The vacationing Chris Netto is an AV consultant with AV Help Desk. How are you, sir?
Doing good, and glad to be here.
Last but not least, my buddy, Mr. Kevin Iselli. He is from Crestron Electronics. He is their senior curriculum developer. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you, man?
Good. This week, we're going to talk about a ton of things, including a couple of different things dealing with Infocom, actually an article that Mr. Grimes wrote, also talking about Cydia and some of the predictions that they've made for the rest of this year. But first, kind of some interesting good news, bad news. We're just going to kind of kick it around and see what we think. Apparently, Sharp is selling, or according to a lot of different people, Sharp is selling their China and their Mexico plants. And the word around different industry analysts, and these are people who watch Wall Street, not like AV guys, but who actually watch the business of doing this stuff, are saying that they're going to get out of the display business altogether. And this is interesting because Sharp is one of the, they're not the biggest player in the world, but they're one of the main manufacturers of displays. Brad, we'll start with you on this. Is this a big deal for the display industry in general? And what do you think Sharp is doing?
Is it a big deal? It reflects a big deal in the display industry, namely that displays have just become incredibly commoditized. If you ask me, it's a shame. Sharp made good products. They've been doing a lot lately with large screen displays, you know, very large displays. They've got some in the residential space and the commercial space. But at the end of the day, it really is a very low-margin, commoditized business. Unfortunately, this doesn't surprise me. I don't think Sharp will be the last, old-school display company that has troubles and needs to figure out their business model. It doesn't surprise me. It points to a much larger issue, but it's unfortunate if it comes to pass. They do make good products.
Kevin, Brad mentioned the magical word, the commoditization. See if I can say it. Is he right? Is this just more of that? And how do we, offset that? Are we going to be left with just one guy making panels?
Well, no, that's hard to say. I mean, have panels become a commodity somewhat? I think it's part of the victim of their own success. As you drive the panel prices down into the ground, you have less money on profit. You know, the old saying, less is more. No, less is less. but you're also on the hinges of launching OLED, which we saw with LG and Samsung at CES last year. This year. But it is. It kind of shocked me to hear this because I know Sharp is the maker of the glass for the Pioneer Elite that they're using Pioneer's driver with the Sharp glass. So yeah, I was a little taken in on this.
Steve, is this going to be just one more in a range of guys going bye-bye, or do you think Sharp is going to refocus on maybe a different technology?
I'd have to say the latter, that they're probably just refocusing their efforts into something that's probably their higher profit or a little bit more groundbreaking. It just seems like Brad and Kevin said that the market just probably doesn't bear enough profit, and they just need to go in a different direction.
Chris, you and I both deal with the end user here. Is this something that I get the impression that this is not something that they're going to feel, because 9 times out of 10, the person who ends up using it, they don't look at the bottom of the display and then says, "Oh, you're using a Sharp, or you're using a Sony or a Samsung."
Probably not. And the way they're going, you're talking about the nameplates with the bezel shrinking on these things. There is you're not getting a name on a TV to begin with, or an LCD. But what this is definitely a reflection. Other manufacturers are starting to go through the same problems. There's constant, upheaval coming from the LCD or TV display manufacturers about, the technology and stuff. But similar to what Steve said, they're all waiting for the next thing. We're all waiting for stuff. And we've talked about it before on the show about the, bendable screens and thinner, lighter, more modern technology, which right now isn't there at 55-inch for the consumers. It's just one less choice.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is, I get the distinct impression that as, Walmart and as Best Buy and all these other places have, made a commodity out of flat panels, when it comes to the installation market and when it comes to the integrator, the end user, I get the impression 9 times out of 10 probably couldn't care less whose name is at the bottom, or like you said, the bezel's going so thin, you're not going to see the name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the integrator will install whatever they're going to go get. Now that could be from the Best Buys or the Walmarts of the world, but on the pro AV side of the business, they're looking at, we need, if it's going out on an RFP, it's 55 inch LCD monitors with the minimum spec. The name won't even be there. That's just the way it is, unless the company that is purchasing this is specific, looking for a particular brand, because they may have had them.
That's very true. All right. Player Sonos is a streaming service, and they're adding something called Amazon Cloud Player. This is interesting for me from two aspects. First of all, we talk a lot about content delivery on the show, simply because it's starting to get integrated in not just residential but also boardrooms and commercial interest. Kevin, this is interesting to me on two hands. First of all, it's something that we're going to have to start dealing with now as integrators. Secondly, this plus a couple other things that Amazon has done, including making their video library available for the iPad and other devices, Amazon suddenly is becoming a player. Not as huge as probably as some of them, but still they're becoming a player in this content delivery, this online, this cloud-based content delivery system. Would you agree with that?
I mean, absolutely. They actually started as the original player when you could buy and download content. Switched that back some months ago to streaming only, which is, I don't want to say it was taken off of our ADMS product, but we did have actually hooks into it. Now it's kind of buried. I don't know where that's going from there, so don't ask. But yeah, they're definitely a player. I mean, with Kindle helping their business and them being kind of an information delivery sort of structure, that it makes perfect sense for them to offer those services.
Brad, is this something that we as integrators and as AV professionals, whether it's Amazon or it's Netflix or whoever, is this something we should pay attention to, or is it just interesting to us because we're all geeks?
Both. It's interesting. I mean, Amazon's consumer cloud services are great, and so for Sonos or anybody else to put them native in their products makes a lot of sense. Good native integration of any of these services is good for the consumer. But Kindle and cloud services or Cloud Player and consumer things aside, Amazon is a huge cloud services company. I mean, there are a lot of enterprises. There are a lot of other types of organizations on a much bigger scale that are hosting cloud services through Amazon. So they're gonna, you know, they're gonna be a big cloud player. So we have to get out of our head sometimes that, oh, Amazon's where you can buy everything under the sun and it's a retailer. No. They are a huge force in cloud services overall, and they always will be. And to the extent that we need to start integrating cloud services into the things that we do, we're going to come across them, you know, whether it's a very consumer-y application or whether it's a very enterprise application.
Steve, Control Concepts, your company, does a lot when it comes to control systems, not to be, you know, simplistic there, but that's what they do. One of the coolest things that I've seen in a control company is the ability to serve up all this information when you're streaming stuff. The name, a lot of times the album art. Is this something, whether it's Amazon or Sonos itself, that you guys can continue to integrate in into that display for a touch panel?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I'm real impressed with Sonos, and I like the direction that things are going, and the more they offer, the more valuable it's going to be. It's very easy to use, and it really is a great retrofit product. Well, one of the things that comes to mind when I start looking at this and we're talking about Amazon is the fact that it looks like they're gearing up to go head-to-head with Apple even more, because now they both have tablets, they both have stores that they're selling you content on, streaming, and so forth.
That's interesting you say that, because that's something that I hadn't thought of a year ago, is the fact that Amazon might be going after Apple. But as they have more and more offerings like this, it does seem that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would say.
Chris, this is something that I mentioned that I asked Brad if we have to start paying attention to this because of the end user. This is something that, whether that's a boardroom or a classroom or somebody's house, this is something we're going to have to pay attention to. Do you think that maybe Amazon and let's say Netflix or Pandora or whoever else, Spotify, is this where it's going to be? They're going to have 15,000 different choices, and it depends on the end user. Or do you think this is kind of going to shake out in the next 4 or 5 years, where there'll be maybe a half dozen left standing?
This will shake out, like everything else that we've seen in our industry and outside. I just think that Amazon has got the best, I guess, suite of products. If you look at Netflix, it's just movies. If you look at movies and TVs, you look at Pandora, it's music. They got books. They got a shop. They got movies. They have everything under the sun, like you said. And it's one-stop shop for everything. I mean, I can go from buying a movie to buying a book in 2 seconds, and it doesn't necessarily have the restrictions that an Apple device would, where you need to be on iTunes or using their devices. I mean, I bought one on my tablet, and then I went and bought one on my PC. And, you know, that flexibility is encouraging.
Yeah, it is.
No. On a corporate side, it may be a little difficult with corporate, you know, access rights and stuff like that to get out to clouds, but you never know.
The interesting thing is, Steve mentioned the fact that they're going, that it looks like they're at least trying to compete with Apple. The interesting thing to me is the fact that they suddenly, and this was like with little fanfare, the end of last month released this app on the iPad which allowed you to stream the content from the Amazon Prime Video library. Now, I will tell you, just from firsthand experience, you cannot throw that to your Apple TV. You can, for some reason, you can send your audio, but you can't send the video through the app, which is odd to me. But you know, maybe they'll fix that here. That aspect, though, being able to do that with the iPad, regardless of what the source is, and putting it on the Apple TV, makes that little tandem, the Apple TV and the iPad, or the Apple TV and the iPhone, really interesting, because not only do you not have to pull HDMI and concern yourself with the content protection over the air, but it gives you a little bit more flexibility to allow these CEOs or allow these professors to walk in with their own devices and say, okay, I have this content here. I'd like to show it on the projector or on the display. And you don't have 15,000 different little cables to plug in, and you don't have content protection to worry about. Apple is taking care of that on the back end. That to me is also a little exciting too.
Hey, Tim.
Yes.
To add to that, there is a model out there ready that is failing. Look at satellite radio in cars. When that came out, that was the only way you can get uninterrupted commercial-free music, right? Now, most phones can get Pandora. Mm-hmm. The car I have now, it integrates Pandora right into the radio. So as long as I have a, you know, unlimited data plan on my phone, satellite radio is not something I need anymore.
No.
So, you know, this is definitely the way of the future, and I think all the other things are going to start suffering from that. But it's just, we'll have anything we want, anywhere, anytime.
Yeah, and you're talking to an old radio guy who looked at satellite radio with crossed eyes, so I am not going to mourn their loss. That's just me. I don't know. Maybe it's sour grapes. I don't know. You're listening to AV Week with Brad Grimes, Steve Greenblatt, Chris Netto, and Kevin Iselli. My name is Tim Albright. Something that we came up with and came across, something that excites me to no end because I like the idea of the Microsoft service, and there's a couple other products. There was one or two that came out of ISE this year, which are these giant tables somewhere in the neighborhood of $7,000-$8,000. And they're touchscreens, but they're also kitchen tables and this, that, and the other. Well, the Madero X Series from AMX, which to me is probably one of the sexiest touch panels, and I say that as my buddy Kevin sits here, who works for Crestron, I still think it's a sexy touch panel.
You're dead to me.
I know. I'll buy you a beer. Yeah. I think it's a sexy touch panel. Well, now they've got a freaking tabletop version. Are you kidding me? Steve, you're our control guy this week. You are our integrator control guy. You're the integrator representative, not the manufacturer representative for control this week.
But still very neutral.
Yes. Is this something even useful? I mean, let's be honest here. These things are really cool and they look sexy, but you know what? I use my dad a lot when I think about technology and stuff. My dad would never buy one of these. There might be a handful of people, you know, like Donald Trump might have one in his house just because it's possible. I don't know. Is this thing even viable as a product?
Well, it's neat. And just like we talked about, I think the last time that I was on, you know, the ability to do gestures and so forth, it's the future and people like that. And the programming behind it obviously has to support it, as I'll always pitch. But the idea of having, you know, a really big touch panel for the right application, if you have a huge video wall or maybe 90 displays in you know, a specific type of a situation, yeah, and you need that type of real estate and the ability to move things around and make it intuitive. I could see that. It has to find a niche.
Yeah. Mr. Netto, is this something you're going to be able to put into one of your boardrooms somewhere?
No.
Why not?
I say no because it is, you're talking about a table.
Yeah, I'd come visit you and at least, you know, drool over your installation.
I'd rather have an interactive touch table than a control okay. I'm picturing a control panel the size of a table, like Steve said, for large applications where you need 1,000 buttons on one screen and you need the real estate to put it on. That's definitely a use for it. I mean, can it tilt? You know, what is this thing going to do? I see this as very niche, it's very specific to a certain market. I would love to have a coffee table with a touch panel built in too. I think that'd be great. But the minute I put down my plate of food on there and put up my feet and something turns off or something turns on, I'm not going to be happy. And I wouldn't want anything put on there. And that's taking it into the home side and in the boardroom side. I don't know. You're venturing off into weird territory because now once you start talking about furniture, now you're even more in line with like facilities and designers and architects and stuff like that. And if that stuff is being spec'd in, oh man, I can't wait to see who the architect or designer would be that specs that in.
No,
it's like using a iPad for a control interface. Oh, sorry.
All right, Mr. Iacelli.
Well, it's just going the other way. It's really what it is.
Well, okay. Explain that, because I see this as more in line with the Crestron AMX, you know, philosophy about touch panels. It's a dedicated system.
Well, it's a dedicated system, but you know, you try to incorporate all types of different functionality into it. I mean, Crestron's been doing OS-based touchscreens for years, where the touchscreen itself has an internet connection and has Internet Explorer and Word and PowerPoint and all that stuff. So
I'm sorry, hang on for a second. Did you just mention the fact that you have Internet Explorer as a feature?
It's built into the graphics engine. You ought to check out our products. Yes.
Explorer.
Well, would you like Chrome?
Yes.
Okay.
Even Firefox. I mean, come on. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Boy, I'm giving you.
Gosh. Some people you just can't please. So I can see it's just the flip of that coin. It's no different than saying I need my iPad as my touch interface.
So, okay, let me ask you this, because as Crestron in general, and I'm not asking you to, like, say, you know, we're designing this, that, and the other. Haven't we got to the point where, have we reached the end of the line when it comes to touch panel design? I mean, one of the coolest ones that I've seen from Crestron is the 6X line. You've also got the 9 version of that. But, I mean, in the last couple of years, you came out with the V panels. But there are still the clunky versions of on both AMX side and Crestron where they're just squares and rectangles. I don't know.
Well, you know, that's a good point. And, I mean, I guess until somebody's actually making a touchscreen that looks like a banana or has some other geometric shape, you know, because we're kind of, I don't want to say we're targeted or shoehorned by the glass, but you know, you are still looking at a visible surface. So when that changes, we change, or you know, because we're never stopping development. We're always trying to create new things, but. As far as the, let's say, their design goes, well, there's a lot of stuff in them too, right? It's not just a TV. There's more to it, right? So can they become more sleek? Can they become more attractive? Sure. And I'm sure you'll see that actually developing as they go. I think that tabletop panel is pretty damn cool myself. Sorry, I said damn.
I don't care.
No, I think the design is sleek. I think it looks really good. I like the widescreen format of it, you know.
No, I do too, and that was
I'm a fan.
Oh, you're a fan. Shh. That part I'll have to edit out, see.
Okay, please do.
Brad, is this this actually kind of raises another question. Are we in a weird spot when it comes to touch panel design? Because you have so many people asking just to use their iPads or what have you, while the control manufacturer is saying, hey, wait, you know, wait over here, having a dedicated touch panel is really a benefit, and you really do need one.
Well, I mean, what I like about this AMX line is they are trying to get out of the squares and rectangles, and you've got interesting aspect ratios and interesting layouts. You got long and thin, and you got tall and thin, and things like that. And you know, I would ask Steve. I mean, is that sort of exciting as a programmer? I mean, when you see anything that has an abnormal or unique aspect ratio, I imagine it affects interface design and what you can put on there and how many things you can put on there. And to me, I don't know if it'll sell over the long run, but it seems like an interesting way of, you know, injecting a little more creativity into the panels and what you can do with them.
That's a good question. Steve, does that excite you when the aspect ratios are different or you know, long and thin or tall and thin?
You know, it does, because we've been doing the same thing for quite a while, and we've been framing out our projects to work a certain way, and there's a lot to be said for consistency. But if you have a different landscape to work with, you could really look at interface design in a different light, and you may be able to have more controls available to you that you put off to the side that are always there, but they're not distracting. And it is really neat, actually, but it's challenging. And the worst thing that could happen is that somebody goes and approaches a different aspect ratio touch panel the same way they are a standard one.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And you could end up with a real mess.
Or just copy and paste from a square one and, yeah.
Save as.
Yeah, jeez. All right, from our buddies over at CE Pro, CD released some interesting numbers, and I'm going to pick on Brad because he's from Infocom. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. They interviewed or surveyed their members. So let's start there. That's where their information came from. And this is what their members, last year they were called Eskies, and I made fun of people like, you know, Rich Fregosa because of that. Electronic Systems Contractors, I think, is what it was called. And they're already talking about changing that already. So, but they came out with this thing, and it was just, you know, what do you guys think about the industry in general? So this is kind of a forecast from the integrators, right?
Yeah.
Two things came out of it that I found interesting. First of all, they expected their employees' numbers to be flat, so no change up or down either way. But they're expecting revenue to be up 12% over last year. Mm-hmm. First of all, do you believe that? And secondly, why or why not?
I spent a lot of time talking to CEDIA folks in my past. I mean, and builders, the National Association of Home Builders, and in past jobs. And to me, this sentiment, because that's really what it is. It's a survey. It's their best guess of what's ahead. It reflects the larger economy and the larger market. I think it makes sense that they're not going to hire yet because nobody's hiring yet. I mean, everyone's sort of sitting around going, okay, I think things are getting better, but I'm not going to bet my payroll on it just yet. But they're also seeing what, you know, again, the economy at large is seeing. They're seeing housing starts tick up. They're seeing builders go out and acquire more permits to build future homes. So they're seeing these things, and a lot of their fortunes is tied to the housing market. It's why they struggled so mightily the past several years, because the housing market was so bad. There was nobody putting in new homes that needed automation systems or new homes that needed media rooms. If the signs, and they've been consistent the past few months, are to be believed, then that's looking like it's starting to pick up. So it doesn't surprise me that they're optimistic, and I think that's great.
All right, Mr. Greenblatt, you're the closest thing to an integrator we have. Is Brad right? Are the signs out there that where you guys should expect to see an uptick this second half of the year?
See, I can't speak as well for the residential side of things, but on the commercial side, I really truly do believe so. We're seeing the trend, and it's been a different type of year, but I think that we're starting to see the upward tick. On the report here, I find some of the numbers a little hard to believe, because it doesn't even look like they suffered much of a hit throughout the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that's not true.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest here. Everybody took a hit in the last couple. Well, I shouldn't say everybody, but.
And from my residential friends, I've heard that they suffered even more than the commercial side.
And that's what I had heard as well, is that the resi side, you know, were a little bit more taken aback by the downturn than the pro side. So, here's something. I don't know quite how to get into this, and that's difficult for me. But a couple of years ago at Infocom, I was part of a meeting in which the guys at Crestron came up and said, AV should not just be about AV. We should be about just technology in general. And it made a lot of sense. And it was like, yes, absolutely. We should not just be about, you know, the Gazintas and the Gazautas. We should be about technology in general. Absolutely. And they started talking about, you know, whole building management and this, that, and the other. And my eyes glazed over because I don't know what a Honeywell is or a Johnson Control. So, Mr. Iselli.
Yes.
A resident, and actually Kevin was a part of that meeting. You guys have something and had a release out this week about the 3 Series, which is your latest processor, which you, I want to say in the next 2 months, month or 2 months, another swath of products will be released that has the 3 Series in it. It supports BACnet, and that kind of the whole thing kind of took me off, but also took me back to that meeting that said, you know, we should just be about technology in general. Explain to me, you know, the dumb kid from the Midwest, what the heck BACnet is and why that's important.
Well, BACnet is actually one of the protocols used by the building management systems, or like the Trane and Honeywell and all those folks that make HVAC and building automation. A few of them, as well as even your exterior like fire alarm systems and stuff, can communicate through this protocol. So what the meaning of all of this came about is because of our message at Infocom, integrated by design, right? The idea that you can take technically 4, and if you include AV, there's 5 systems in a building. And the one thing that all of those systems are technically lacking up until now is unity, right? The fact that now Crestron can communicate directly to the BACnet systems supporting a number of devices makes us now a central point for, let's just call it, data manipulation, right? So that's where it becomes kind of the important side of what, you know, Randy Klein said, and what we're talking about here is that the building itself is made of brick and mortar. Everything that goes into it is a form of technology, and that's the business we need to be in, because AV is shrinking. AV is being taken over, let's say, by the IT industry, if you will, yeah. Right? Everything's got to be streaming. Everything's got to be, you know, IT-based. So we're basically, what we're seeing here is, let's take our industry back. Or let's actually shape it ourselves. And that's where this is going. And that's what the whole BACnet is about. But again, it is a protocol used by the BMS, or building management systems, that are currently deployed by a lot of, a lot of commercial facilities and such. So it's not something they're unfamiliar with. It's not something they have to relearn or something that's new to them. We just talk to them natively now.
Okay, so let me ask you this, the playing devil's advocate here. I'm an integrator, or I'm an end user. I'm an AV systems manager. So I'm the AV guy. I report to IT department, like most of them do. And this sounds really great to me. You know, you're putting Crestron in my building management. Sounds good to me, because I know Crestron and I like Crestron. We have Crestron rooms. How does that guy sell the operations manager, or, you know, the maintenance department who is in charge of the HVAC system, or the security department who's in charge of the security system? How does he convince those guys to get on board with this, or is it not even his job to do that?
Welcome to our world of pain.
Well, so you don't have an answer.
I wish there was an answer. Me coming from the former consulting world, I understand why this is such a challenge, let's say, because, you know, I was a electrical engineering designer, electrical engineer designer, as well as I did technology, and there was many times that we did buildings, and, you know, the term the design silo comes into play, where, you know, the guy who's doing the HVAC system sits right next to me, and we go through start to finish of the whole process, and we've never talked to each other. You know, so how do you get those people to talk? I don't know. I understand a lot of booze and steak works, but, you know, it is definitely getting them to the table is the hard part.
All right.
You're also talking about that those people may or may not want to. I don't want to use the term give up control, but they might feel threatened by, you know, us little AV peoples of saying, you know, we can do all of this stuff. We can take control of it. We can manipulate it. We can make intelligent decisions as opposed to just singular system decisions, which I think is the most important part. You know, the misnomer of daylight harvesting saving us energy, you know, we find that that's not really true. It's when you're using all of the building systems to get adequate data, appropriate data, and make decisions based on that. Sorry.
No, yeah, go ahead. This is Brett. And I'm not just saying this because Kevin's on the line. I mean, to me, this is actually really exciting. And the way you get all these people in a building to talk to you is by knowing what BACnet is and by being able to talk BACnet. And I mean, BACnet is a industry standard. It's an ANSI, ISO, ASHRAE standard. It's used all throughout the industry. If I'm not mistaken, Crestron has supported BACnet in certain ways in the past over IP. Having it natively in products is exciting because at the end of the day, you know, you say it to a group of IT people, you know, their eyes are likely to glaze over. You say it to some other groups who don't, you know, necessarily talk HVAC and some of the their eyes are going to glaze over. The fact that an AV person or someone who's has experience with the control systems that we have experience with can sit there and go, you know, I know how to control your whole building, and this is what it's going to do for you, and I have products that, you know, are ready to plug right in and do all this natively, to me is a big deal, because I think these someone's going to want to be the smart building expert. That person doesn't exist yet. That person, in most buildings, the person who can integrate it all together and understands all the different languages, you know, from their languages to ours, doesn't exist yet. So it might as well be us. So I think this is cool, and I expect a lot of products to start having some of this native capability.
Yeah, we actually, that's a very good point. We started with a product called the GLA BMS, which was basically a modem-style device that converted like BACnet MSTP, Modbus, LawnWorks, right, and even Metasys into, right, let's say, Crestron Speak or IP Speak, so that we could communicate with these systems. Right. So we've been here a while. We're welcoming. We've got the doors open, welcoming everybody that wants to walk in.
Okay, so let's talk to Chris and Steve here about this, because Chris is in the same boat as I am, managing end users and being in those meetings that were across the table from the HVAC and the AV guy. Chris, is there a way, or can you see a way where, maybe not, possibly retroactively, but let's start with like new buildings. You're involved in a new construction. Do you see a way where we can start integrating these ideas into, you know, the first steps of planning out a new building?
First, let me pick myself off the floor, because Kevin put us in a, gave us a seat at the table as part of the big five. That's a, wow, I get out of the kiddie table. I could sit with the big boys now.
Yeah,
that would be great. Unfortunately, like I love the idea. And I think, like everybody here is saying, it's great. Unfortunately, though, I'm not just going to say this because it's Crestron, but Crestron is going to get labeled as the AV company. And that AV comes with the stigma of TVs, cameras, in-room stuff. If it was another company doing this, it would have been hailed as, this is awesome. But because it's an AV company, it's, again, we've never had a seat at that table. So now here's the AV guy in a room full of people that are normally used to dealing with each other. There's HVAC, the fire, security, and all them. And the AV guy on the side is like, hey, I can make all you guys talk. And that's not, you know, that's not what they're used to. It's a stigma that when those guys get in a room that they have to get past. This has been done. Integrated building control has been talked about. Consultants have been trying to put this into spec. But there is resistance on a lot of different fronts when it comes to centralized control or unified control and who has the power, like Kevin said, who can play with this stuff and who can see it and who really wants to be the master of all those systems.
It gets quite honestly, kind of dicey. We're pardon the expression, we're rolling the dice on the AV industry, because and as I tell my classes, nobody has the capability of understanding as well as executing integration like the AV industry. It's what Absolutely. We're here for. So I think it's very, I don't want to use the term brazen. It's very bold of us to say, yes, we can do it. But yes, we also believe in our industry can do it. That's where I think it makes a big difference. And you're right. The problem Crestron has, if they ever had a problem, is that, yes, we are labeled as AV. And that's kind of unfortunate.
We're the only industry, like you said, that are built for this. Right. We've been cut up and been told to do 100 different things. You've heard it at InfoComm meetings. I've heard it in regular vendor meetings. Integrators talk about it. We're the only ones that have to speak 1,000 different languages already.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So we're very good and very conditioned to translate and make friends. Well, some of us, other people don't. Yeah. But I mean, you threw IP at us, we had to learn that. You threw video conferencing at us a couple years back, we've had to learn that. Everything that's thrown to us, we have taken and figured out a way to make it play nice. Unfortunately, though, we're always pushed aside as that, we get put at the kiddie table because we're not playing with the big boys. But that has to change, and I think this is the right step doing that.
Okay.
Wasn't it not too long ago, though, that we were all afraid to be on the network? And yeah. we didn't want...
are you kidding me? We're still afraid to be on the network.
Oh, gosh. But I think, Steve, because of it, in 2001 when... Or, I'm sorry, 2001 or 2002 when InfoComm was in Anaheim, I remember... I wasn't even with Crestron at the time, but I remember seeing that one word over the booth, and it said convergence. And like in 2009, that was the buzzword. I was like, so you're telling me the industry's 8 years behind Crestron? I don't understand the message here. So, but yeah, you're right. We were thrown every single obstacle, and AV has adapted to it. Now, this is just a new obstacle. And to share with you guys a little quick story, I was telling this, let's say, message to a integrator. And I'll use their words, not mine, and I'm not going to tell you the integrator. They're like, they basically said, so we have concerns that you're telling us now we have to compete with the electricals and the mechanicals and these folks. I said, well, I wouldn't call it concern. I would call it an opportunity. And if you have no skin in the game now, why are you concerned? Well, here it is. It's a new industry. You can either get into it or you can run away from it. It's going to change.
Well, isn't that kind of, though, the industry in general, though, right now, where the AV industry is morphing into a different industry, kind of? 5 years ago, people made a ton of money, what they called hanging and banging displays. Well, you know what? You can't do that anymore because most people can go to Best Buy or Walmart and get, a display for a tenth of what you sold them 5 years ago, and they can hang on themselves, or they can hire some teenage kid to do it. So we're just kind of going through this interesting little metamorphosis where this may very well be another opportunity. But
yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's funny though, Kevin, how you mentioned convergence in this whole thing. We've converged with everything.
Yes.
But the one thing that we have a hard time converging with is with IT, in my opinion, because IT within a company, they will still fight tooth and nail over certain things. They'll restrict the bandwidth on your VC. They will restrict what you can put on their network. All that. We're still trying to – that's the only piece I think that we're left to converge. We have converged. Everything has an IP connection. Or can be remote for the most part, outside of maybe a laser pointer. I mean, honestly, everything is pretty much gone down that road, but yet there's still people that are, banging their fists, and the convergence is coming. And we've been in that process for years. And this here is just another example of it's going to play out, and eventually it will just happen. Just like everything else, it will have to happen because the piece that's missing is the complete control of everything, or the centralized point, the NOC of a building.
Yeah. Plus also, yeah, and it's funny because we got that resistance very early on as well. You put an Ethernet port or LAN jack on a product, and now, those little people that run the information, they're a little nervous and twitchy. They use possessives like, you're not going to put that on my network. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny though, because let's say the Goliaths of the industry, Microsoft and Cisco, and they use our products. So if you're looking at somebody who is a pioneer or someone who's that large in the industry saying that it's okay to put this device that says Cestron on it on your network, I don't understand where the resistance is. But you're absolutely right. That is the one place that we could use the most help in getting acceptance into the industry is the one place that's resisting the most.
That's true. How do you fix that?
We take it over.
Billy clubs? I don't know.
We take it over. We have the advantage, too, of knowing how the room's used and have the touch point with the client. And that's one thing that I think we can bring to the table. You don't want to start changing lighting and HVAC. And if you don't know how the room is being used, if somebody's in there or if they're doing a video conference, what is the application? And I think that might be the key to this puzzle is to let people to factor that into the equation of harmonizing all of the different control systems.
Yeah, that's true. You're listening to AV Week. Thank you so much for doing so. With us is Brad Grimes, Steve Greenblatt, Chris Netto, and Kevin Iselli. Mr. Grimes works for Infocom. He is their senior editor, and this week he wrote a very interesting piece, and I'm not going to say anyone's age here, but let's just say that he was kind of talking to us because we're all kind of older. the title of the piece is "Will Youth Be Served in Pro AV?"
I still like my comment. It's a cookbook.
Kevin made reference to an old Twilight Zone, a very good Twilight Zone, by the way. To serve man, Brad, kind of take us through this. And talk about, because we've got the real AV Week, not the podcast, but the AV Week coming up in October, kind of a celebration of the AV industry. And a lot of guys and women take that opportunity every year to educate and reach out to people, especially hopefully young people. But kind of walk us through this and take us through what you're saying. You know, they're younger, they have more energy. You know what? You're not getting any younger, Mr. AV professional.
And the people we talk to all the time, the members of Infocom and the integrators and consultants I talk to all the time. I mean, they recognize this freely. Their companies, and if we do informal polls and surveys of people and ask how many people under say 35 they've got, the vast majority say it's less than 10% of our workforce. They recognize that. Just the way that the industry has evolved, the way it started out, the folks who really got it going, did it because they loved it, did it because they, you know, were into the gear. They were roadies. They were people who really were enthusiastic about AV and they got into it. They didn't get into it because there was a professional track that said, okay, this'll turn you into an AV expert and an integrator.
Yeah.
And there just isn't that right now. I mean, we hear a lot from people. Listen, we need to get younger. We need to get some younger people in here, but we're having a hard time finding them. How can we start teaching the younger people about the industry? Because the industry's changed. It's not just audiovisual gear. It's not just projectors and screens and speakers anymore. We obviously want to help out and start to identify these ways of finding young people. And I want to say it's not, uphill battle is the wrong word, but we're still sort of at the beginning of trying to get younger people educated about that the AV industry can be a profession, that it's not just a vocation. It's still sort of seen, and you'll see in the article a lot of the people that I talk to, they understand that young people see it's a vocational school type industry. It's not something that you study like MIS in college or something like that. And it's important that we start to build awareness in younger people that this is a vibrant industry. It's still all the stuff that we've already talked about today, all the stuff we talked about BACnet, it's a thriving, it's a dynamic, it's bigger than just the A and the V these days, and you can make a huge career out of it. And if you get into it now, you're coming in at a great time. But And on the flip side, I mean, obviously there are young people who are in Infocom, and I talked to a bunch of them. And, you know, they look around and they're trying to find the best way to get trained up, and they're looking for mentors, and they're looking for, you know, their spot and their opportunity to, you know, really push the industry forward. So, you know, companies getting younger isn't a big issue because I say so. It's an issue because, you know, we hear it from a lot of companies. We hear it at the show. We hear it around roundtables that we hold all over the country. And I'm not saying that any of us really has the answer right now. You know, we just need to find opportunities to get out there, teach courses. Obviously, the courses that a lot of our volunteers teach around the country are important. But it's going to be something that if we don't start getting a lot of really good, talented young people to come into AV instead of, say, going into IT or something else, then, you know, there are a lot of companies that are genuinely worried about who's gonna you know, take it over down the road.
All right, Mr. Greenblatt, you started your own company. You are the president and founder and whatever else you want to call yourself at Control Concepts.
Anything that needs to be done.
Anything, the chief dishwasher. Anyway, that's my father-in-law. How does it take Brad's cue here? How do you get young people involved? Because he's right. You can't go to Washington University, which is a big school here in St. Louis, and you can't sign up for AV 101. So how do you get these kids interested and involved?
I think you have to lure them in with the technology. The fact that we are embracing mobile technology, we are doing cool things like, you know, talking about streaming, and we are a part of the equation. It, you know, although AV and AV hardware is old and been around for a while, we are evolving, and I think that bringing them in from that angle and the idea of the user interface that they know very well, probably a lot more than we did, and the fact that technology to them is native, whereas we, when I first started doing this, and probably everyone else, we had to educate and push technology, and now technology is just a given to that generation. So it's I think we have to be enthusiastic about what we do, and also when it comes down to it, as our industry will hopefully continue to thrive, the jobs will be there, and I think that the people are always looking for jobs, so we just have to make it look attractive.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, you're one of those guys who has gone from an integrator and a consultant to a manufacturer. You went mm-hmm. there through one of the college paths that I at least consider at least being somewhat similar or somewhat having to do with AV, and that's electrical engineering.
Yes.
So is there something where, as AV professionals, whether that's a manufacturer or integrators or Infocom maybe with Brad, where we can go to these electrical engineering schools and start there? Is that something that we should do?
No.
Okay, never mind.
No, and we've had this conversation a few times, Tim. We think, both you and I agree, one of the challenges of the AV industry is we take all the leftovers, right?
Yes.
We call our office here, we are the retirement home for AV geeks, right? There is no straight up audio visual or even, let's say, technology style of degree or, you know, formal training. And it really is kind of a problem, right? Because now how do you get that education out there? And I think that comes from great organizations like Infocom and CEDIA who puts out as much educational data and as much time in the classroom as they do. But how do you even start that interest? I think it has to go back to, you know, colleges, universities, and even in some cases, the parochials and middle schools. Let them know that there's this really cool thing out there called technology, and you can get your hands into it at an early age and make some really cool stuff at it. And you should see that. Never mind.
Jeez. Jeez, you know, right.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, is this something where, as Kevin says, you know, take it to not just secondary school, but, you know, take it to the high schools, take it to the middle schools. Is this something where you take the opportunity during AV week, or is this something more where you, you know, during the normal course of your everyday life as you meet people, you say, hey, by the way, you know, you're a teacher or you're a science teacher, you know, you can use your classroom as an example and also expose these kids to the world of AV.
Well, this is sort of a topic that's pretty near and dear to me because I was that kid trying to figure out what my role was going to be in this industry. And if you go through back with my past history, I went to college for communications and I got my degree in radio and television. That's how I worked the angle. My first job, basically, I spent as an intern with a professional football team, and I knew what a BNC was. I got hired based on the fact that I knew what a BNC was.
Wow.
Okay. So, because anybody else who was coming in knew what a yellow, white, and red jack was on the back of a TV, I knew what a BNC was. So it worked. And I had no clue what I was getting myself into. I mean, I practiced with cameras and stuff on my shoulders. So I went to school for something similar, but not exactly this. And I made a career out of it. But what I learned early on was, you know, I tried. I've done every position almost in this company, in this industry. I've been as a tech. I've been a project manager. I've been in sales. I've been the end user guy on site. You know, now I work on a consultant type basis. It's hard. It's a hard industry to figure out. But what has happened over the last 12 years for me, at least, is I got my education, and now I sort of don't fit any mold. And that's sort of good because I can do just about everything. Stuff that I've been working on my own, with my own blog site and stuff like that, I've been capturing the bigger picture of AV. Going out, finding training materials, and putting it, whatever I can find as far as that manufacturers, organizations are out there offering training online, I'm grabbing those links, I'm putting them in my website, and I'm putting it out there. Hey, it's here. And that was a big part of the whole problem, was that you didn't know where to go either. You know, there's so many different aspects as to why youth and AV wasn't working from the people that are the integrators just weren't providing you the training. The mentors were teaching you what you needed to do for that job, but they weren't really sitting you down and going, you know what, after you're done soldering that cable, let's look at a set of plans and let's start working to make you, you know, understand the engineering side of the business.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of this sort of things not being shared and guys not knowing where to turn, and management wasn't really showing where to go either. I think now with the youth and, you know, all you guys are on social media and all that, there is a community being built, and it's being built on a daily basis. Information's being exchanged like never before. Before, anything that was found was hoarded and was never released out, and nobody shared stuff. You know, I may find out that there's a new product coming out from Apple that, you know, whatever it may be, they'll integrate into our products. If this was 10 years ago, I would never tell you that. Why? Because I want to be the first one out there with that. What I've learned in my time is there's no advantage to keeping that information there. Share it, because it can only help you later on down the road. But, you know, this goes towards the youth thing. And I think we've had this conversation too, Tim. It's, you know, we're at an age, I can only speak for me and Tim here. We're at an age, because I don't know everybody's age, but we're at an age where we can act as a conduit between the young Gen Y and the older generation. And because we had Nintendo growing up.
Yeah.
So we understand that mindset. We know the original Nintendo. You know, we don't know what they're doing today, but we get it. We played for hours on video game systems where the generation before us didn't. So we're a good conduit to speak. And I think that the 30-something, 40-something generation that's in AV right now has a lot of work to do to bring along the AV youth and bring them in and make them, you know, see that there is a bigger there's a bigger picture to this, because now we're getting all different types of people, not just the hash leftovers. I spoke to, I would say a kid, but he's not really a kid, recently, who was a designer. He took a design course. He loves design. And he goes, I really like, you know, what you do, and I'd love to get into it, but what is there a fit for me? I'm like, hey, man, there's people trying to design content for digital signage. There's people designing touch panels.
Yep.
There's people designing those LCD transparent displays. That's a design piece that I don't know. I'll sell you the box. You make it look pretty. And there's a need for that in our industry. And that's what makes our industry great, is that we can take designers. You know, at one point, people like Steve were just artists. These are guys that are just graphic designers that knew how to make cubes that would go on an LCD panel. You know, now they've actually got their own programming language and build the panels to make them look good. So I've seen it happen and morph, and there's more coming. But enough about that.
No, that's my take. I'm you know, I'm sitting here going, amen, brother, preach it. Because you're right, we have an interesting position. I think most of us, I would say all of us on this call are of a certain age that, you know, we can be that conduit. And whether that's, you know, connecting with them through music or through, you know, video games or technology, we can at least connect with these guys. I mean, there's two guys that come to my mind when we talk about youth and young people in the world of AV. One is named Chris Tatt, and the other one is Matt Scott. Matt Scott's on this show an awful lot. Chris has been on a couple times. These are gentlemen who, Matt's had his own business for about 10 years as primarily Resi and House of Worship, but he's done some commercial. He's not even 30 yet, all right? And he's been in the industry for over 10 years. Chris, and I want to say, I could get this age wrong, but Chris had his first Crestron training at the age of 19, all right? I can't say on this family-friendly, you know, podcast what I was doing at the age of 19, but it wasn't taking a Crestron class, let me tell you. So, you know, these young people, and I'll put both of them in there because they're still in their 20s. These young people are at least excited, and you've got two guys here that I can point to that are excited about the industry, and they've already got experience that I wish I had at their age. You know, I wish I had as much experience as their age. So we need to lean on guys like Chris and Matt, who are even closer to the high school and the college age guys. So I don't know. That's my two cents. You know what, guys? That's going to kind of wrap us up for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Brad Grimes, he is the senior editor at Infocom. Thank you so much, Mr. Grimes.
Thanks for having me.
Would you like to promote anything or send out your Twitter or Facebook or anything else like that?
One of the things we didn't get to, I just want to quickly say that in November, one of the things Infocom is going to be doing is working on a healthcare conference.
Yes.
With something called NEHIC for short. This is just one of those things. This is, you know, the way an industry association is supposed to work for its members. Get out there and introduce them to industries that are growing. I don't have the dates in front of me. It's around the same time as GovCom, but it's in November. It's a healthcare conference. I recommend a lot of people investigate it.
And that's NEHIC is the one that integrates healthcare and technology.
Yeah, NEHIC is short for the National eHealth Collaborative, and we just joined together with them to put on a conference. And there's going to be you know, some great discussions about, you know, how AV can factor into the healthcare market, because, you know, something we found in some recent research is that the healthcare market for AV systems is growing really fast, especially in North America.
And that is the November 27th through the 28th in D.C. Yes,
27th, 28th in D.C. at the Ronald Reagan Building.
Yep. All right. Mr. Steve Greenblatt, he is the president of Control Concepts. Would you like to promote anything, sir?
Well, my Twitter is at Steve Greenblatt. I'm a member of the CEDIA Tweeps social media squad, and we're going to be at CEDIA in 2 weeks. And there's going to be a social media lounge where everybody can meet up and so forth. So just hope to see everybody there.
Very cool. I'm still up in the air yet because it's an indie, and technically for me, that's right up the road. So. And Mr. Chris Netto, he is the AV consultant with AV Help Desk. Would you like to promote anything? I'm going to get this wrong. The Red Squad?
No, the red band.
The red band.
Red band is just a bunch of guys that are getting together and putting out the word. You know, the different articles that we do. I'm getting guest bloggers coming in to abshout.com, and you know, looking out for people that are interested in writing. And Red Band pretty much just came together as a concept. Just getting a bunch of people together and saying what maybe they can't say on their own blog sites or through their company sites or whatever, and giving them a voice. That's the only thing.
One of those band members is our buddy, Mr. George Tucker. So,
And he unleashed one. So that was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
So it was pretty good. That's it. It's avshout.com. My Twitter handle's @Chris_Nutto. And I'm with AV Help Desk.
All right. And last but not least, Mr. Kevin Iacelli, the Senior Curriculum Developer for Crestron Electronics. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you bet. Thanks for having me.
You have the coolest Twitter handle that you never use. So
I know. Thanks.
His Twitter, if you care, is Control Geek. Or I'm sorry.
Control Freak.
Control Freak. And it's just, you know, he doesn't do anything with it. My name is,
might.
You don't.
I might.
You're
I
not
might
going
start.
To. No, you're not. You're just
I might start
me.
Tweeting.
No.
You well, I won't. Got my new iPhone, so I'm going to
well,
start
Well, there you
tweeting.
Go. Yeah. Yeah. All right. My name is Tim Albright. If you'd like to follow my tweets, it's T as in Tim, D as in David, Albright, A-L-B-R-I-G-H-T. But more importantly for me and everybody here at AV Nation, go by the website. The website is avnation.tv. avnation.tv for this podcast and others. Go to our partner site, ravepubs.com/AVNation. ravepubs.com/AVNation. That's all the time we have for AV Week.